Danielle Laidley is a former Australian rules football coach and player who played for the West Coast Eagles and North Melbourne, winning a premiership with North in 1996.
Laidley behind, open goal, Dean Laidley gets it.
Her new book, Don't Look Away, details a journey through gender dysphoria from premiership to rock bottom to reclaiming her true self. Please welcome to Triple M Breakfast, Danny Laidley.
It's one of the most talked about and most amazing stories in Australia today, maybe in the world today. Danielle Laidley, a very good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
How happy are you at the moment, Danielle? Because I've read a bit of stuff coming into today and you seem like you're happier than you've ever been in your life. Is that a fair call?
Yeah, Roo, it is a fair call. I'm at peace. My life is not compartmentalised. I can talk to you guys about anything when I've not been able to do that. I have my full circle of friends and family around me, which I haven't had in my life before. In my family, my relationship was a little bit closer, which we're working on. Life would be pretty much utopia at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, that's good.
Now, I've been reading about the compartmentalisation that you had to do for so long, putting different versions of yourself in different boxes, and literally you had female clothes in certain boxes that you would put on at certain times of the day when you could be secret. What kind of toll does it take on your mental health to have to keep such a profound secret for so many years?
It was very, very difficult. When I was playing football, I suppose what I did was build a brand or a persona of, you know, this person, named the Junkyard Dog when I was playing, and then Jess Sinclair calling me the Bible when I was coaching North Melbourne.
Why were you the Bible?
Because I was hard to read.
That's right.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
It was very funny. When I was, when Jess did the interview, I heard it and we all had a laugh, but I really thought, you know, I wish I could tell you, but what I did was I actually got in front of the playing group and said, well, if I'm the Bible, have you ever heard of Judas? And he said, oh, no, who's that? So I explained who Judas was and I said, well, you're our Judas. And everyone started laughing and that, but, you know, they were the mechanisms that I had to use to
protect yourself.
Protect myself and carry on. And it was very difficult because when you're a coach and you're trying to pull a team together, you talk about trust and being authentic. And I kept wrestling with myself, but I just couldn't get to the point where I was just lived in fear and shame and embarrassment of what people would think. There was many conversations that you have in the change rooms or in football or it's in the media about who was the gay footballer,
right?
And I would, like, it would give me so much anxiety. I would just run for the hills. I'd think, huh, gay footballer, you wait till you hear about me. So it was an interesting time, and I thought I was coping really well, but you can't outrun gender dysphoria. It eventually gets you, and you can't live a normal life because you can't think. It takes up all your thinking, and the feeling of who you really are.
Yep.
You were a very aggressive footballer when you played, and you sort of had that trait in you as a coach. Is that just your personality, or is that a reflection of your frustration in life?
Great question. It was more of frustration in life. Rue, if you were the same, tough and aggressive, but if you asked around the AFL enough with people that I played with or people that I coached or people I played with, you would get two answers if you asked them about me. One was quiet, introverted, at times perhaps aloof, unsociable, or you would get angry and can be a volcano very quickly.
Yep.
And they were the two behaviours that manifested because of what was happening underneath, if you like. And And I hated myself for that because I knew that's not me.
Yeah.
But because I wanted to keep my worlds so far apart, those are the behaviors that manifested over such a long period of time. And look, when I finished coaching North, you know, I was 42 years of age after 7 years, and I felt like I had one foot in the grave. Like, it took me quite a few years to regenerate myself, because I was just that exhausted. Look, I ended up in Adelaide for, you know, 2 years, and gee, I love living there, but you know, I was away from my children, but it also gave me more time. Basically, I lived as myself. I lived by myself at home there in Glenelg, but the pull of my family was just too great.
Can I ask you, just obviously listening to this incredible story, and in recent days you've mentioned people like Mick Malthouse from the world of AFL, who's been very supportive, and you've talked about people at North Melbourne, very supportive, and others. Looking at the book and everything you're talking about, was there a point where you thought this would be much easier to do this somewhere else? Did you think of, why don't I start again overseas or in a small country where no one's ever heard of me, no one knows me? Did that ever cross your mind, or was this the only way to confront it?
Yeah, there was fleeting thoughts of that. And I remember when I got to the point where I was spiraling, and I was self-medicating on hormone replacement therapy, and I got to the point where I thought, gee, I need to do something about this. And with my counsellor one day, it just came out, and I didn't even, it must have just, my body couldn't handle it anymore, and my mind couldn't handle it anymore. And so I went to my endocrinologist, and, you know, they did some tests and all this sort of stuff. And she said, well, you know, you have gender dysphoria, which I sort of knew, but I've never been told that. You know, on a percentage of 0 to 100, she said, I'm pretty sure you'd be around 75, 76, which is very high. But then she said, so what are you going to do? I said, well, I don't have a choice. It's either be here and be happy, or leave the world in pain. And I said, but I've got one other problem, and that problem is that I've been involved in the AFL for 35 years as a player and a coach, and I'm not too sure how it's going to come out. And she said, oh, well, move in the state. And I just started laughing because she had no idea about football. So the choice was to live and be myself and be here for my children, rather than leave the world in pain. I self-harmed twice in the last 7 years. The last one, 2020. And if there is anyone listening that are having those thoughts or dealing with any issues, please call the helpline. You know, I'm sure you guys there have got the number, but, you know, we don't want anyone to go through that, and we don't want anyone to feel like they're alone. And I'm so grateful of what the AFL world, the AFL family, have been unconditional in their support right from the very top. Gil McLaughlin has been wonderful.
Yep. No, that's great. When was the first time you realised you perhaps wanted to be a lady?
The first time, Roo, my recollections are about 6 years of age.
Really? Can you remember the moment?
Yeah, I do. For all those mature listeners out there, my mum had an Avon party. Would you believe?
Yeah. The Avon lady.
Yeah.
Yes, and the lady was there with her red lips on, and she was getting out these nail polishes. I'm thinking, oh, what's this? This is really interesting. So the ladies, you know, did their orders and started to have a wine and all that sort of stuff, and I've nicked a bottle of nail polish, ran into my mum's room, one of my nails, and it was really interesting because even at that age there was a sense of peace and calmness, but that very quickly turned to terror because once the nail polish dried, I couldn't get the bloody thing off. So I had to run out in the back and, like, I'm bloody getting sand and rocks trying to get it off. Anyway, that from that time, and, you know, there was other times with my cousins who would you know, dressed me up, and I look in the mirror, and they thought it was all fun and a joke. And was I'm thinking, oh wow, you know, at this point in time, you know, I'm probably 10 or 11 now. I was thinking, wow, this is me from the inside. You know, I've always seen myself as that, but on the outside, I was far different. And the only difference now, to be honest, is that my outside is now congruent with all how I've always felt.
Yeah.
I read that you used to go and do your job during the day, come home, and if you knew you had a fairly big window at home, you'd go out to your shed, get dressed up, put your makeup on and cruise around the house. What sort of were you thinking at that stage? Did you lock the doors? Did you? How did you sort of bulletproof yourself to make sure you didn't get caught?
There was always the fear of that. I was lucky. My wife at the time, she's known since my playing days. So it was always great to come home, kids go to bed, and we'd just be ourselves. And
so she knew.
It was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was very cathartic. It just relaxed me. I felt at peace. I felt that this was me.
Yeah. Yep.
How many other people do you think hide what you've chosen to not hide anymore? How many others, there are lots of people that never expose who they really want to be.
Yeah, you're right, Roo. And the reason why I have told my story is because I just don't want people to realise that they're alone and you can actually talk about it. And I think this is one of the great things that has happened out of this and coming out and doing it, and I hate the word coming out, but doing it on my own terms was taken away from me. I'll never get that back. It was just horrific for my family.
Would you have come out if that didn't happen with the police?
Yeah, well, what we were doing, Roo, so once I got diagnosed, I started to work with my gender psych, and just before it all blew up, we started to talk about how it would look, and we were going to engage the AFL because we felt that it would be easier to have the AFL behind me and stand with me rather than stand out there, you know, by yourself, which happens to a lot of transgendered people in society. Now, I'm just so lucky that I've been accepted for who I am.
Yep.
And I think that can go a long way to helping, you know, all sorts of people in all different areas of their lives where, you know, they may be dealing with some issues.
Danielle, very, very well said. We applaud you for coming on. Good luck with your book. Don't Look Away. It will be a fascinating read. I haven't read it myself yet. And for anyone listening, you know, I'm sure they are just full of admiration for what you're going through.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having
me. Good on you, Danielle.
There you go. Danielle Laidley. And as Danielle mentioned during the interview, if you are struggling with anything, any mental issues, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14.